హరే కృష్ణ. టుడే విల్ బి రీడింగ్ టెక్స్ట్ 51 ఫ్రమ్ చాప్టర్ 23 ఆఫ్ క్యాంటో 11 ఆఫ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం. టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 51. చాప్టర్ 23 ఇస్ కాల్డ్ యాజ్ ది సాంగ్ ఆఫ్ ది అవంతి బ్రాహ్మణ. So text 51 is as follows. Dukkhasya hetur yadi devatastu kim atmanas tatra vikarayostat yadangam angena nihanyate kvachet క్రుధ్యేత కస్మై పురుషస్వదేహే. దుఃఖస్య ఆఫ్ సఫరింగ్ హేతు ద కాజ్ యది ఇఫ్ దేవత ద డెమిగాడ్స్ హు రూల్ ఓవర్ ద డిఫరెంట్ సెన్సెస్ విదిన్ ద బాడీ టు బట్ కిమ్ వాట్ ఆత్మన ఫర్ ద సోల్ తత్ర ఇన్ దట్ కనెక్షన్ వికారయో విచ్ పర్టైన్ టు ది ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మబుల్ సెన్సెస్ అండ్ దేర్ డీటీస్ సత్ దాట్ యాక్టింగ్ అండ్ బీయింగ్ యాక్టెడ్ అపాన్ యత్ వెన్ అంగం అ లింబ్ అంగేన బై అనదర్ లింబ్ నిహన్యతే ఇస్ హర్ట్ క్వచిత్ ఎవర్ హృద్యేత షుడ్ బికమ్ యాంగ్రీ కస్మై అట్ హూమ్ పురుష ద లివింగ్ ఎంటిటీ స్వదేహే విదిన్ హిజ్ ఓన్ బాడీ. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్: ఇఫ్ యు సే దట్ ద డెమిగాడ్స్ హు రూల్ ద బాడీలీ సెన్సెస్ కాజ్ సఫరింగ్ ఇఫ్ యు సే that the demigods who rule the bodily senses cause suffering, still, how can such suffering apply to the spirit soul? This acting and being acted upon are merely interactions of the changeable senses. This acting and being acted upon are merely interactions of the changeable senses and their presiding deities. When one limb of the body attacks another, with whom can the person in that body be angry? When one limb of the body attacks another, with whom can the person in that body be angry? Purport: the Brahmana is elaborately explaining the condition of self-realization, in which one understands oneself to be totally distinct from the material body and the mind and the demigods who control them. Which means, self-realization, it is mentioned here, is the understanding by which one knows that one is totally distinct from the material body and mind and the demigods who control them. By cultivating bodily happiness, we are forced to accept bodily pain. Foolish conditioned souls endeavor to eliminate distress and enjoy happiness. But material happiness and distress are two sides of the same coin. One cannot relish bodily happiness without identifying oneself as the body. But as soon as such identification occurs, one is harassed by the innumerable pains and sufferings also inevitably present within the same body. Bodily happiness and distress are administered by the demigods who can never be brought under our control. I repeat, bodily happiness and distress are administered by the demigods who can never be brought under our control. Thus, one remains subject to the whims of providence on the material platform. If, however, one surrenders to the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure, one can reach the spiritual platform, where transcendental bliss enlivens the liberated souls without any interrupting anxiety or unhappiness. I repeat, if, however, one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure, one can reach the spiritual platform where transcendental bliss enlivens the liberated souls without any interrupting anxiety or unhappiness. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tammaham Vande Shri Guru Dina Tarinam Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Hare Krishna. So there's a lot of esoteric sentences in this entire section, and if you see, many of these translations are questions. If this is so, then what about that? If that is so, what about this? It's all question marks, if you see, most of the translations. So this is a conversation which is happening between Lord Krishna and Uddhava, and the context is that of the Avanti Brahmana. So if you go through the last, the previous three or four translations until the next 10 translations until verse 60, what is the essence of all these discussions which are happening? The essence is that through these conversations, two personalities are trying to dissect as to what is that single most source of problems for all of us in this material world. That one single source. So therefore so many things are being discussed. Is it the demigods? Is it this? Is it that? Is it intelligence? Is it body? Is it neighbors? So many things are being discussed, and it's like each one of these causes are being eliminated. Saying that no. If this cannot be the cause because of so and so reasons. Okay. Now 9 out of 10. Okay. Now 8th one cannot be the cause. 7th one cannot be the cause. So ultimately they are trying to arrive at the root cause of all problems in this material world. And the whole conversation culminates in verse 60, where it is mentioned that the whole cause of all these problems is the mind. Okay. That's the culmination of all this conversation. That's where everything ends. Okay. So I was wondering, since this Krishna Uddhava Samvad has been happening since I think last 6 months, I don't know. Okay. And before that there was one conversation between two other personalities. Then before that there were conversation between two other personalities, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is going on like this. So two people are discussing something. One is asking a question as if he doesn't know anything, and the other one is answering, giving enlightenment. Okay. So one may think that why is this kind of a discussion happening? For example, all of us know who Uddhava is. He's not an ignorant person. He knows everything. Uddhava is the most intimate associate of Lord Krishna. He is number 2 in the list. Number 1 is the gopis of Vrindavan. Number 2 is Uddhava. This is the conclusion of Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Right? So he is not a conditioned soul. So why is already a perfected liberated soul asking questions as if he doesn't know anything, and then Lord Krishna is giving him answers? So I was hearing one lecture, and I was reminded of a program which used to come on television many years back in Doordarshan. People from India will know. This program was called as Arogya Sampada. Anyone remembers this? Arogya Sampada. Arogya Sampada was a program wherein the doctor from Bombay Hospital, the same doctor used to come and sit every time, and he used to call different specialists. Sometimes he'll call ear specialist, sometimes he'll call cancer specialist, sometimes he'll call somebody for diabetes specialist, you know, so on and so forth. And then they used to have these conversations. And this doctor, he always used to ask a question, saying that, you know, so what about diabetes now? Can you please tell us how diabetes can be cured? And then he'll give whole gyan on diabetes for the next 45 minutes. And the next session of Arogya Sampada, he'll say, how can you cure cancer? Then he'll say, okay, cancer, this, so and so. So some ignorant person who is watching may say, okay, this person last week he was asking about diabetes. Within 1 week he developed cancer. Now he's asking about cancer. So many diseases this guy is having. Right? So how many questions he's asking? Such a diseased person. So obviously, that is a foolish notion. Why are they discussing this? For the viewers of Doordarshan. Okay? People like us, because we have to understand, that's why some two knowledgeable persons are discussing, so that something goes into our head, because of that conversation. So therefore, if you see, the entire of Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but a health show, like Arogya Sampada. It's a health show, but it's meant for the health of the conditioned souls, like that. So, all these conversations basically are aimed at conquering the agitation which is caused by the human mind. Because it is concluded by the Srimad Bhagavatam that all our problems are within the mind. And once the mind is conquered, then everything is conquered. Then there is no happiness, there is no distress. There is no material happiness, there is no material distress. There is still spiritual happiness. So, in the scriptures, there is a commonly quoted verse which says, Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayah bandhaya vishayo sango muktyai nirvishayam manaha. Which means, this mind itself is the cause of bondage, and the same mind is the cause of liberation. Okay. For example, just now somebody entered the door from there into this classroom. Okay. So if you take the example of that door has got two purposes. One purpose is that, okay, someone peeps in saying that, okay, this is Srimad Bhagavatam class goes on, and then the same door can be used to come in. After 5 minutes, if the class is very boring, then the same door can be used to go out also. So the door has dual purposes. Similarly, the mind has got dual purposes. Either it can enter into Krishna consciousness, or it has the free will to go out of Krishna consciousness. So there is a duality. The mind works in dual ways. If we allow the mind to be controlled, then we can transcend the happiness and distress of the material world. But if we don't allow the mind to be controlled, if we just keep it, you know, if we don't, there's no reins to the mind, then it can go anywhere, and we will then be bound eternally to the happiness and distress of this world. Now, given that the mind is the root cause of all the problems in this material world, which is the summum bonum of all these verses, the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, they talk about how to control and conquer this mind. So the sutras say that for conquering this mind, one needs to know the metaphysics of how the mind works. Okay. So today we will spend some time discussing the five progressive stages of controlling the mind, the five stages that lead gradually up to liberation. So it is said that the stage one, the first stage of the mind, is called as mudha. Mudha means what? Fools. So mudha, in another sense, means being under delusion. Because fools, what is the definition of a fool? A definition of a fool is one who lives under illusion, or who is easily deluded. So it is said that when the mind is completely deluded by the mode of ignorance, Srila Prabhupada called that condition as mudha. Mudha also means donkey or an ass. So if you see, donkeys are very peculiar animals. Okay. Donkeys generally, you know, they are very peaceful. They are not like dogs, you know, barking all the time. Very peaceful. They look peaceful at least, you know. Like that, you know, if you see in India mostly, you'll not see, I don't know, do you see donkeys in India? I haven't seen one here in this country. But in India, you'll normally see the donkey is going on the road, you know. There's traffic everywhere. Donkey doesn't care. Wherever he wants to stand, he'll stand.
And generally the donkeys display a lot of contemplative mood, very grave, you know.
Donkey will be looking at the road like this.
And somebody almost thoughtful, like a philosopher, looking externally very intelligent. That is the nature of a donkey. So there was this incident. It happened in Karjat railway station in Bombay. Okay. Many of you from Bombay will know. So what happened was, the train was coming from the other end. Okay. And then this donkey was standing on the railway track. This happens only in India, no? The donkey is standing on the railway track. And the donkey is in a very contemplative mood. It is studying the railway line. But the train is coming from there. Right? So the passengers, obviously, in India, they all shout, "Hey, hey, hey, hey," okay, just to distract the donkey from there. So everyone started doing catcall, shouting at the donkey, "Move out." Nobody was daring to go and push the donkey from there. Okay. So somehow this donkey, everybody is shouting, but still the donkey is very contemplative mood. Yes. Shant, undisturbed, like that. Finally, what happened? People started pelting stones at the donkey. At least now the donkey will go away. Then after that, after some 20 seconds or 30 seconds, then the donkey realized, "Oh, I think I am the center of all attention now. Okay, let me do something about it." And then the donkey lifted his face and saw the train coming from there. And then what did the donkey do? With great force, the donkey started running towards the train. That was the end of the donkey. So, Prabhupada called this as mudha. Knowing that the danger is coming, we walk towards the danger rather than away from the danger. So Srila Prabhupada was speaking once and he started singing this song of Narottam Das Thakur. It's a very popular song. It says, "Hari Hari Bifale Janma Gonainu Manushya Janma Paiya Radha Krishna Na Bhajiya Janiya Sunya Bishakhanu." Someone quoted this verse also. I think Gopalanesh Prabhu or somebody quoted this verse. Bishakhanu. A few weeks back. I can't remember who. Everyone, the purport is that everyone is trying to enjoy this material world, and Radha Krishna na bhajiya, nobody is interested in God. So it's like bishakhanu, it's like drinking poison. Vish means poison. Okay. People want to drink that poison. So if you see in this example, everybody was trying to lead this donkey towards safety. But the donkey was a mudha. And a mudha will always leave the zone of safety and run towards poison or the zone of danger. So this is the first stage of the mind, mudha, putting everyone under delusion. In a lecture, His Holiness Radhanath Swami said that Krishna has actually labeled the bottle of this material world with skulls and crossbones. Right. Why? Because this material world is actually poison. But deluded living entities do not see this poison. Though we see everyone else dying, we think that it will not happen to us. Or even if we know, "Oh yeah, I know death, but not now. First let me retire, then it will come." So we think that it will not happen to us, and even if it happens, it will happen after some time. Let others get their first chance and then my chance will come. So the example is given of cigarette packs. Now if you see the advertisements in the United States, the way the trend is happening for cigarette. Now, everyone knows that cigarette smoking is injurious to health. It's a very cliched statement, right? Nothing new about it, right? So how do the advertisements happen? Nowadays, the government is trying to say that no. If you are advertising cigarettes, then you need to show the statutory warning at least twice. Okay. So before the advertisement, you should say, "Advertisement is coming now about cigarette." But before you see the advertisement, "Cigarette smoking is injurious to health." So one click, okay, it will come. And then what happens, once that clip goes away, then a handsome looking hulk comes, okay, puts his one hand in his jeans, his shirt is half open, showing his white, you know, whatever, t-shirt inside, and he's standing on the wall like this, and he's taking a puff, and then blowing it in the air, okay, and some damsel is looking at him, you know, all completely enamored by his style, okay. And then, this is the picture, okay, encouraging us to smoke. Now after that what happens? Cigarette smoking is injurious to health comes, and then graphic pictures are shown of what happens to the lungs. They are supposed to show that. Even in cigarette packets, you see, nowadays, charred lungs, black color lungs, you know, all those are shown. It's very graphic, right? So they are supposed to show all this. So the advertisement industry is very compliant, legally compliant industry. So they show all these things, but after that, what do? Again this Hulk comes on television. Again he takes another puff and says, who cares? So is the advertisement legally compliant?
Yes.
Legally safe. But what has happened after that? The end message is what? Who cares? That's all. So what? If the lungs go like this. So this is the nature of the industry. Putting us under complete delusion. Taking us away from the problem. So in Bhagavad Gita also, the example is given of Duryodhan. Duryodhan said, Janami aham dharma. He says, I know all this dharma. Everything I know. I know that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know that, you know, devotional service, etc., etc. I know all this, but I'm not going to follow. Because I simply can't follow. Right? In fact, he goes on and says that I'm not following because it is Krishna's desire that I should not follow. He puts the onus on the Lord, not on himself. There is absolutely no accountability. Right? So this is called as delusion or living under a self-cheating mentality. Yeah? So that is the first stage of the mind. The second stage is called as Shipta. Shipta means agitation. First stage was delusion, second stage is agitation. Now, while delusion comes primarily because of the mode of ignorance, agitation is prompted by the mode of passion. Shipta. So, Prahlad Maharaj says, the symptom of this agitation, the classic symptom is the modern day sex desire of man. Okay. It is said by Prahlad Maharaj that essentially sex desire is nothing but an itch of the skin. Right? Just like when our skin is itching, what do? Everywhere we try and scratch. So, by scratching, what are we doing? Are we aggravating the problem or solving the problem? Solving the problem temporarily. It's very peaceful when you scratch. But after that, what happens? Then you have nail marks on that and it can get infected also. Right? So, agitation, the mind is completely agitated and the material solution is to counter one agitation by another larger agitation. That is the material solution. So, Prahlad Maharaj says, sex life is like scratching that itch. Of course, in Kali Yuga, people are not only scratching the itch, but they are also encouraging others to scratch. You also scratch the itch. See how nicely I am scratching. Now you also follow. That is the propaganda in Kali Yuga. An example is given of an incident which happened in somewhere in the US when two couples, young teenagers, they were driving this car, okay, and they were sitting next to one another. Right? And then the green signal was there, but the car was not moving at all. The whole traffic was choked up behind. You know, everyone was honking. Pam, pam, pam. What happened? They are not moving. Why? Because they are busy engaging in sex life inside the car. Right? So completely oblivious to what's happening outside. Right? So this is the nature. This is the nature of the material world. Okay? People have forgotten what the definition of shame now has been rationalized completely. In fact, it is mentioned that this nonsense has been given a legal terminology also, right? It is called as public display of affection, PDA. So this becomes very legally very nice. You know, in parts of speech we have something called as euphemism. Euphemism means to put a milder term to something which is very grave. For example, you know, if you have to tell someone this person died, then don't use the word died, use the word he passed away. So it's a milder term for the same thing. So like that, gross sex in public is called as public display of affection. Now it was said that this car, after the green signal, suddenly these people realized, yeah, everyone is honking like the donkey. So they started moving after some time. But two signals after that, again the car stopped at the green signal. Right? And now everyone is again honking. But this time what happened? Public display, the PDA became, instead of public display of affection, it became public display of anger. Both these teenagers were hitting one another. This happened in two signals. This is relationships of the material world. Two signals. Like that. So this is called as agitation. This comes because of mental agitation. So we are dumping more and more agitation on top of ourselves. And the process of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada writes, the entire process of Krishna consciousness is to bring down this fever of agitation.
So this is the second stage, which is called as Shipta or agitation. Now, Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj, he was giving a lecture in manner on Paramatma. He said, for a materialist, the Paramatma is much more active than for the devotee. Paramatma is not having unemployment. No? So for the materialist, because what is the job of a Paramatma? Paramatma's job is Upadrishta and Anumanta. Upadrishta means what? Yeah, witness. And Anumanta means sanctioner. So this is the job of Paramatma. So all the time witnessing, sanctioning, because the mind is completely agitated. But it says, for a devotee, the Paramatma has a vacation. Right? So, because devotee does not have any material desires, so Paramatma is having a relaxed vacation. It is also said in one of the songs, Tomara Hridaya Sada Govinda Vishram. Always the Paramatma is taking Vishram, rest. Because there is no agitation of any kind. So we saw two states of the mind. What is the first state of mind we saw? Muda. Muda means delusion. Second one is Shipta. Shipta is agitation. The third level of the mind is called as Vikshipta. Vikshipta means distraction. Distraction. Now, this distraction is somewhere between the mode of passion and mode of goodness. The first stage was mode of goodness. The second was mode of passion. Now we are just crossing the zone of mode of passion, somewhere in between mode of passion and mode of goodness. So though we are proceeding towards the mode of goodness from the mode of passion, still we haven't completely come out of distraction from our spiritual life. Now this distraction, it is said, is because of attraction. Distraction is because of attraction. For example, when we are chanting, the mind is wandering. We want to chant, but somehow the mind takes us somewhere else. That's because of attraction, that distraction. We think of things that we have never imagined before. In fact, Kesha Prabhu was once saying that if we take a video of our mind and project it in public when we are chanting, most of us won't be talking to one another after that. Right. So, something which is at the subconscious stratum, it surfaces up in the mind at the time of chanting. Now, when you least want it comes up. Right? Now, for example, it is said that this mind is very tricky. How these thoughts come up in the mind. Now, if I ask a question, how many of you this morning when you were chanting thought of the penguins of Antarctica? How many of you thought about the penguins of Antarctica? Not many hands will go up. Why? You thought about the penguins of Antarctica. Today, this morning when chanting.
Because I watched the TV show.
You watched the TV show. One person is there. But usually, if you don't have any prelude like this TV show, for others who did not watch, the last thing in your mind was penguins in Antarctica. So it will never come to your mind. Okay, because you don't care. So the story is given that one person once visited a sadhu. He visited a sadhu and said, I demand to see God. He demanded to see God with the sadhu. Right now I want to see him. So the sadhu said, hang on. No. First you have to practice mind control. Okay. Otherwise you cannot see God. So he said, no, I am very good at mind control. My mind is always under my control. I want to see God now. So he said, no, let's do one thing. Let's see how much your mind is under your control. Okay. So he said, go back and for the next 7 days, don't think of a chimpanzee. For the next 7 days, don't think of a chimpanzee, he said. So 7 days passed. And what happened? This guy was thinking of chimpanzee only. All the 7 days. Why? Because he was told, don't do whatever, don't think of a chimpanzee. But, okay. So after 7 days, he had a different look on his face. Okay. And he came back. And he said, the moment I left your ashram, ever since I have been only thinking of chimpanzee. But the sadhu said, but you said your mind was under control. You didn't have any problems. Then the sadhu said, okay, I am giving you the next exercise for you. He said, for the next 7 days, think only of chimpanzee. Okay. So he started thinking chimpanzee. But the mind was wandering everywhere. Because now he is trying to focus on chimpanzee. Right? So,
It is said that the nature of mind is to do exactly the opposite of what it is instructed or told. Like a child, if you tell the child, Aditya, for example, if I tell my son, don't go and, you know, fiddle with that mridanga there. What is the nature of a child? Tum, 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 tum. Something will be there. Because we have said don't go there. Okay. So that's the nature. So it is said that the mind rebels against any negative instruction which is given. That is the nature of the mind. So, because of this distraction of the mind, then therefore there is attraction. And that state is called as vikshipta. Let's understand a little bit more on this. There's an interesting verse in Bhagavad Gita 6.34. In 6.34, what does Arjuna tell Krishna about his mind? He says, chanchalam ye manak Krishna. Okay. He says, chanchalam hi manak Krishna, pramati balavad dhridam. He uses four words to describe the mind. Chanchalam, pramati, balavad and dhridam. Okay. So, the mind is, Arjuna is telling Krishna that the mind is madly restless, which is called as pramati. Right. Pramati balavad dhridam. One is it is chanchal. Chanchal means what? Chanchal means restless. Okay. Now, there are two types of restlessness. Let us understand two types of restlessness. One is restlessness which is normally admired, which people enjoy that restlessness. And one is that people can't tolerate that kind of restlessness. Okay. Let's take an example. Now there, Kirtan is there. Okay. Now he is busy doing something. Okay. Or sometimes I have seen, you know, Gopal running here and there, you know, in the temple. Or sometimes that boy comes, what's his name? Nithai. Nithai will come inside, you know. The class is going on, but they are in their, the children are in their own world. Why? Because they are restless, like that. But that restlessness looks very cute in the class. Correct? When the babies are running here and there, you know, it looks very cute. Okay. Now, but just imagine, suppose you are giving Bhagavatam class, I am coming inside the class. And suddenly I am sitting in the audience and I am running here and there. No. What will you do? Will you say how cute? You will call the police. And the police comes and the police says, chanchal hai. Chod. How cute he looks, no? Jagannatharam, restless. Will you accept that? Obviously you will not accept that. Okay. So there are these two types of restlessness. Restlessness which is good, which is admired, but restlessness which is really, you know, you can't tolerate that kind of restlessness, right? So this restlessness which Arjuna is talking about is that kind of restlessness which really comes in the way of your happiness. Okay. So it's taken, so Arjuna is using the word pramati. Pramati means madly restless. He says the mind is restless and it is madly restless. Pramati. Now it is said that if, for example, if the same person is running here and there in the Srimad Bhagavatam class, if he is a very skinny person, a thin person, then you can just catch him and say, shh, sit there. You can tell. But if he is a huge person, you know, sometimes there are some hefty people who come to the temple, no? They'll come like this and they'll start walking here and there. No, nobody will dare to, you know, even tell them. Can you please, what? You know? So nobody will dare to tell anything to them. So if the restlessness is like an elephant, giant size, then it is very difficult to control such restlessness. So Arjuna is telling Krishna that the mind is not only chanchal but pramati, madly restless, on top of that very balwan. You can't do anything to such a balwan. It's very powerful. You can't throw that person out of the class, that mind. You can't subdue. And then on top of that, if somebody wants to counsel that person by logic or reasoning, still that person will not accept anything. Why? Because the mind is dhridham. Dhridham means stubborn or obstinate. So the mind, four characteristics are given of the mind. One is chanchal, pramati, balavar and dhridam, obstinate. Everything is there, right? So, powerfully, madly, restless and stubborn. That is the nature of the mind. So, Arjuna, and this is happening to who? This is happening to Arjuna. None other than one who could control the temptation of Urvashi's beauty. That Arjuna, who could control his mind with the most beautiful woman in heaven, he was not able to control his mind on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And he is talking about that. Then what to speak of our mind then? So, interestingly, what happens when Arjuna is mentioning this verse in 6.34, Chanchalaye Manakrishna and Dhridam Pramati, everything, in the next verse, Lord Krishna is immediately responding to him. What does Lord Krishna says? He says, I completely agree with you. So Lord Krishna is not saying that the mind is not, no, the mind is okay, you know, everything will be alright. No, he didn't say that. He says, I completely agree with you, my dear Arjuna. And the words Lord Krishna uses is, asamshayam mano dur nigraha. Asamshayam is without doubt I understand that the mind cannot be controlled. Okay, forget it. And he says, you are mahabaho. You are not an ordinary person. You are one who can control your mind. Okay. So, but then Lord Krishna tells him, it is difficult, but controlling the mind is not impossible. Okay. He says, I understand. And then what does he say? What is the remedy for controlling this mind? Two things. Abhyasa and Vairagya. Knowledge and detachment. These are the only two ways, knowledge and detachment, Abhyasa and Vairagya, by which we can control our mind. So, generally, in hearing and in chanting, we are faced with two kinds of challenges. One challenge is called as Vikshepa. Vikshepa means what? Material attraction. And Laya. Laya means laziness or sleeping. Sleepiness. Right? Two types of problems. Either our mind is attracted to something material, or we are just not at all attracted to what's going on. Just sleeping, dozing, Laya. Or Vikshepa. Okay. So once an interesting incident is given of Satswarup Das Maharaj. In the early stages of Krishna consciousness, Satswarup Das Maharaj once went to Srila Prabhupada and confessed to Srila Prabhupada. He said, Srila Prabhupada, many times in your class I feel sleepy. So Srila Prabhupada gave him a very difficult reply. He said, I know that. That you are feeling sleepy in my class. And he told Maharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam is for advanced souls. Neophytes can sleep. He said. Neophytes can sleep in the class. This is the reply he gave. And after hearing this, obviously Satswarup Das Maharaj was wiggling there, okay, in front of Srila Prabhupada, and it was such a blow to him. He said, no, Prabhupada, I want to be advanced. I don't want to be like that. Another incident about Laya, sleeping, and sleeping in Srimad Bhagavatam class. This is about Abhimanyu. When Arjuna was talking about how to get out of the Chakra Vyuha to Subhadra, what happened to Subhadra? As he was explaining about Chakra Vyuha, Subhadra was in her own view, in a different world completely. Because of which what happened? She understood that part and communicated to Abhimanyu how to enter the Chakra Vyuha. But when Arjuna was explaining how to come out of the Chakra Vyuha, she was dozing. So sometimes inattentiveness in Srimad Bhagavatam class can cost us our life. So, I'm not trying to scare you now. So this is an example which is given in Srimad Bhagavatam class. So what is the solution? The solution Lord Krishna says, for Vikshepa, the solution is Vairagya. And for Laya comes because of no attraction. Sleepiness or laziness is because of no attraction. The solution is Abhyasa. Or developing that attraction by constant sadhana, which also includes reading and hearing. It is mentioned that anything which is done repeatedly starts becoming very attractive after some time. It's mentioned, an example is given of a small child. As a small child, how many of us had kachori and samosa when we were born? Not many. As a small child, we always used to have this Nestle, Cerelac, this baby food. And eventually, the child gets habituated to such baby food. And what happens? Eventually, at that time, if you go and give a child a kachori or a samosa, then the child is going to run all over the house. In fact, when you do the first rice, when you start feeding to the child, it's really a horrible experience. Okay. All of you grihasthas will definitely know with children that you will find, sambar in the bedroom, you will find rice in the bathroom, You will find the child is running everywhere, all around the house, and they are running with a spoon here and there. I remember Emmanuel running behind Aditya like that. Right? The whole house will have food everywhere. Okay? That is the nature. Right? Because the child doesn't have any spontaneous attraction for that. Even if you run behind the child, not interested. But forcefully put the child and put that spoon inside his mouth. Every mother knows this, right? How to do this trick. Right? And then what happens? Gradually the child starts developing taste for samosa and kachori. Now I am asking all of you gentlemen sitting here, you know, will I have to run behind you with samosa and kachori? In fact, if you say, you will run behind me. Aray, Prabhu, kahan se mila? Where did you get this? We run behind anyone who has got a nice plate of Mahaprasadam. Nobody needs to tell. Our mother need not tell us anymore. Why? Because of constant practice, now that automatically that attraction for that thing has come. So that is called as habituated. So, Srila Rupa Goswami gives this example of the jaundiced tongue and sugar candy. He says that keep on taking the sugar candy, eventually when the jaundice goes away, then the taste for sugar candy will start manifesting. Therefore, it is said that abhyasa, by constant practice, then what happens? You can cure the problem of lay or laziness and sleepiness. Now, in our case, this attraction has not developed completely. Because we are somewhere in between. We are neither that side nor this side. Somewhere here and there. Like that. Okay. So, Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting purport in Canto 6 of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Srila Prabhupada says that the mind has the nature of always following a superior dictation. Mind always follows a superior dictation. Now that dictation can come from Mahamaya, or that dictation can come from Yogamaya, any of these two. So we find that the gross materialists, people who are materialists, right? These people are so engrossed, so used to working very hard, when they are working very hard, there is no question of sleep coming to them. I know one of my colleagues in the US, you know, he used to call meetings when in the US it was 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, he'll call meetings. For me it was no problem because Australia it was okay. For my time zone it was okay. But one day I asked him, Shubhkan, don't you sleep anytime? He says, no. You know, I just sleep for 2 hours or so. I'm okay. And then he says that, no, by the way, I said, after this meeting, would you be sleeping? He said, no, I've got to take a flight to New York. I have a meeting at 7 a.m. my morning. I said, this guy is not from this planet. So, people who are gross materialists, who really have complete material ambitions, they don't want to go home. They'll just keep on working. That's it. Right? So, the gross materialist, he will never sleep in sense gratification. He'll never sleep. There is no lie for him because there is an attraction for something. And similarly, Prabhupada says, a pure devotee never sleeps when he's thinking of Krishna. It's the same situation but applied to spiritual life. So when we have that kind of attraction for Krishna, then there is no sleeping in Srimad Bhagavatam class or in any Krishna Katha. But because people like us, we don't have a single dictation to follow. We are neither completely there nor we are completely here. Therefore, we struggle with this problem. So, while vikshepa can be taken care of by vairagya, the essence is that laya can be taken care of by abhyas. Now, this abhyas or reading Krishna consciousness, that's one major component of abhyas, it's very powerful. An example is given of a German devotee. This is a real life incident. In Germany, there is a devotee called Gopati Prabhu. Right? Now, he was telling about his life story somewhere in public, so I can share it, that somebody asked him, Gopati Prabhu, how did you come to Krishna consciousness? So he said, it was very interesting, that I was living with my girlfriend in Germany. And they had rented one apartment, and both boyfriend and girlfriend were staying together. Now, in Germany, it is said that there is not much to see. Okay. After some time, you know, you have seen everything. So there is nothing new. So the landlord, where they were staying in the house, that landlord told them, there is one interesting place, why don't you go there? It's called as the Hare Krishna temple. They saw very nice prasadam there. And there's dancing and feasting. I said, wow, dancing and feasting? Let's go there. So the girlfriend was very interested. So she said, okay, so let's go there. So she went there. When they went there, she heard Srimad Bhagavatam class or Bhagavad Gita class. And then they danced and feasted. Now ever since that experience happened, his girlfriend completely got sold out to Krishna. Gradually she started following four regulative principles to his utter disappointment. Right? And chanting 16 rounds. So obviously, you know, like in Bombay we sometimes used to say, going, gone. Girlfriend. Slowly going and finally gone. So Gopati Prabhu saw that finally his girlfriend was moving away from him, because now she was not interested, you know, in the earlier life, completely, you know, enjoying Krishna consciousness. So he said, no, I have to do something about it to bring her back. You know, how can I, you know, just let her go like this? So let me do one thing. This Bhagavad Gita which she is quoting every now and then, let me read that book cover to cover. I'll find flaws in that book and I'll counteract. I'll tell her how it is wrong. So with that kind of, you know, strong attraction, determination, he started reading. And he said that in one sitting, cover to cover, he read Bhagavad Gita. How many of us have done that? In one sitting, cover to cover. That was the kind of attraction he had. And then, you know what happened after that. After that, he was completely brainwashed himself. Both of them are happily married now in Grihastha Ashram and initiated also. Both became devotees. Okay. So this is the third stage, Vikshipta, which means attraction. The fourth stage of the mind is called as Ekagrata. This is the next progress of the mind. So thus far we have moved from mode of good ignorance to mode of passion. Then we came into that middleware zone. What is it? Where both are there, mode of goodness and mode of passion. And now we are coming into the mode of goodness. And that stage is called as Ekagrata. Ekagrata means concentrated absorption. Right? Now, this comes in mode of goodness. And this absorption, concentrated absorption, it is said, can come because of two reasons. One, it can come because of fear. Or one, it can come because of hope. Concentrated absorption in something comes because of fear or it because of an intense hope. Let's take an example. In the Puranas, it is mentioned that there was a gentleman in a village and everyone used to criticize this fellow. Oh, see, look how he is. Look at his hair. Look at his dhoti. Everyone, whenever he used to walk, people used to always criticize him. This fellow got fed up. Completely fed up. Whenever people see me, they are criticizing. Everyone is ridiculing me. Similar to the Avanti Brahman. Avanti Brahman used to walk, the whole world was behind him. Right? They used to, you know, pass urine on him, somebody used to throw stones at him, people used to criticize him. So similarly, this guy was undergoing the situation of Avanti Brahman. So he said, no, enough is enough, I am going to complain to the king. So he went to the king one fine day and he told him, my dear king, it's your responsibility, you are the king, it's your duty to protect me. Right? The whole village, everybody is criticizing me wherever I go. So the king said, okay, fine. And what did the king do? The king summoned two hefty executioners. You know what's an executioner? A person who chops off people's heads, gives capital punishment. So two huge looking hefty people he called. And then he told those two people, get a pot, a big pot of oil which is boiling and which is filled to the brim. It's filled to the brim. And then he told this fellow who was complaining that everyone was criticizing him, he said, I am going to give you an exercise now and you have to do it because I am the king. I order you. You have come to me with this problem. So this fellow was already scared seeing two executioners and, you know, hot oil. So he said, what is this exercise? He said, I want you today to take this pot of hot boiling oil and walk around the village throughout the day. Right? But if one drop of oil from this spills down, your head will spill out from your body. The executioners will chop off your head. So you have to carry this hot boiling oil throughout. So what happened? This fellow took this hot boiling oil and he was walking throughout the village. And what happened? The king by that time had already told all the villagers that this fellow comes, ridicule him multiplied by 10 times today. Now, obviously the subjects were very happy. They said, now we have, you know, Sarkar Manya. You know, government itself is telling now. So why not just, you know, do whatever we want? Who doesn't want it? Right? Lawlessness is liked by everyone. So they started doubly ridiculing this fellow. So this guy started going, you know, he was focused on that. Focused. In the evening came back to the king. And then
The king asked him, what happened today? He said, it's amazing. I'm successful that I didn't spill anything. But what's more amazing is that no one criticized me today. And then the king turned to the executioners and asked them, is it true what he's saying? He said, no. In fact, today, people were criticizing him the maximum. Even the dogs were barking at him today. Right? But because of his intense absorption in that activity, his mind was, he just didn't hear those criticisms at all. So sometimes the mind can get absorbed by fear of something. The second example is the mind getting absorbed because of hope. Again in the Puranas, the example is given of a lady. This lady, she was already married, but she was having an extramarital affair. So she had a paramour outside of her marriage. So what happened was, one day, after her husband used to go out to work or whatever, she used to run and meet her paramour. So one day, she was kind of getting delayed. So she wanted to, and she knows that I am delayed today, and my paramour will be waiting for me, right? So after her husband went, she was very eager to meet. I mean, she was just longing to be with her paramour. So what she did, immediately started finishing everything and she ran. She knew that if she goes through the regular route, she will not be able to meet him on time. So she took a thorny route through the jungles. And as she was running through these jungles, lot of thorns, pebbles, everything was piercing her. But like a woman possessed with her paramour, she was just running towards him. Now what happened was, in the forest, there was a sage who was meditating. Intensely he was meditating on something. So this lady did not see that sage. So what she went and crashed right into that sage who was meditating. So obviously you know what happens in Bhagavatam. When a sage's meditation is disturbed, what happens? Yeah. So sage was furious. And the sage opened his eyes and said, what nonsense? You know, where do you think you're running? He started shouting at this lady. But this lady was, her mind was on her paramour. So she just ran. She just, and she was not even responding. She said, how impudent, how audacious. She's not even responding. First of all, she comes, I'm meditating, she comes and falls on me. And then she doesn't even say sorry, and then she's just continuing to run as if nothing happened. So she's just completely disturbed. Now what happens was, this lady, finally she runs and meets her paramour. And that meeting happens, okay, the courtship is happening, and after that, both she and her paramour are returning through the same route in the forest. This time, the sage catches them. Excuse me, do you know that when you are running so hard to meet this fellow, that I was meditating here, you disturbed my meditation completely, and I'm so angry now. I was meditating for so many years, and now, you know, I'm completely disturbed. No. You didn't even say sorry to me. So the lady replied to him, very interesting statement. She says, I was absorbed in a meditation and you were also absorbed in your meditation. She says, my absorption in my paramour was more than your absorption in whatever you were thinking. So, next time, kindly be more absorbed in whatever you are thinking. She told the sage. Obviously, the sage was completely speechless. So, this is the kind of absorption which comes from hope. So, the conclusion, of course, the conclusion of this is not that I have extramarital affairs. That's not the conclusion. The conclusion is simply that this ekagrata, this absorption which arises because of hope is much more stronger than the ekagrata which arises out of fear. That's the conclusion. So this is the fourth stage, which is ekagrata or concentrated absorption. But the ultimate stage of the mind, the fifth stage, is called as niruddha. Niruddha means absolute trance. It's not even absorption. It's called as trance, which pure devotees exhibit. Now, in psychology, sometimes they talk of
what is called as contemplative reality, okay, where there is a psychosis, you know, by the process of hypnotism or some psychotic messages, you take the person to some realm of reality. Right? Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, such, you know, trance is mentioned. The example is that of Narsimhananda Brahmachari, which is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, Narsimhananda Brahmachari, he could not join Mahaprabhu, but he was always contemplating on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, in his meditation, he was always thinking that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is now going to Vrindavan. And actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to Vrindavan. Then he says, now, I am sweeping the road for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to clear the pebbles out of his way. And actually, that was happening in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Narsimhadas Brahmachari is somewhere else meditating, wanting to serve the Lord. Manasa Puja, this is called as. Right? And then he says, now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stopped in Kanai Nakshala and he will not go anymore than that now. He is not going further to Vrindavan. Kanai Nakshala, full stop. And then Mahaprabhu stopped there. Like that. So, this is an example of such intense absolute trance which has the power to control the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another example is given of the Brahmana in the banks of the Godavari who used to make the sweet rice. He was boiling the sweet rice, he was mentally thinking, I am offering the sweet rice to the Lord, I am boiling it. And then he just put his finger in the sweet rice bowl, he is meditating. And then he got burnt. And then when he came out, there was no sweet rice, there was nothing, but his finger was burnt. This is called as Manasa Puja. This is the last stage of the mind. Complete trance, absorption in the service to Godhead. So, it is not some artificial, you know, concept like the contemplative hypnosis or whatever. So, but this, there is a substantial reality, you know, in these kind of examples. When we read the scriptures, we will come to know. Now, how do we reach this particular stage? It is mentioned that this stage can be reached only through the power of Naam. It is said, it is verily the holy name, the name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It is verily through this name that you will get a revelation of the Guna, Rupa and Leela of the Lord. And that comes out by complete absorption in the name. So, again, in this suite of verses, where earlier we studied what is called as the Uddhava Gita. Right now we are learning Bhikshu Gita. But before that, we went through Uddhava Gita in Canto 11. It is mentioned that Lord Krishna is telling Uddhava that a sadhaka can perform sadhana using both his senses. He can use his karmendriya senses, which is his fingers, ears, etc. As well as he can use his jnanendriya senses, like his mind, etc. Yeah. But the Lord says, whatever absorption and meditation that you do, and this is the ultimate instruction that Lord Krishna is giving, ultimate instruction of all this. He says, all this complete absorption, meditation, everything, mind control, ultimately should lead to dravata chetasa. Dravata chetasa means that if the heart is not melting by the chanting of these holy names, one can never feel this ecstasy, even if we chant for millions of years. So, we will conclude with one or two incidents. So, it is mentioned about this absorption, complete absorption, or dravya chetasa, where the heart is melting. There are examples which are given. When Narad Muni visited Vrindavan to meet the gopis, to his amazement, Narad Muni found that the gopis were seated in a lotus position and they were engaged in Ashtanga Yoga. Can you believe this? The gopis engaged in Ashtanga Yoga. Gopis are the highest in bhakti. And yoga ladder we already know that bhakti yoga is much higher to Ashtanga Yoga. But here the gopis are engaged in Ashtanga Yoga. Anyone knows why? Correct. The gopis, he went and asked, why are you doing Ashtanga Yoga? They said, we want to stop thinking about this Krishna. Therefore we want to control our mind. We are not able to do our household activities. Ever since Krishna has gone, we are not able to be our normal selves. We can't do anything. We are only thinking of Krishna. So, but we want to control, do our household activities. So, do something, Ashtanga Yoga, whatever yoga that is. We want to stop thinking about Krishna. And Narad Muni was amazed. He said, what is this? And our situation is obviously exactly the opposite. So, and then, There is a wonderful example given, a related example, in context of these gopis doing Ashtanga Yoga. It is mentioned that why were they failing? Why did the gopis fail in all their attempts to remove Krishna from their heart? Why did they fail despite doing Ashtanga Yoga? Okay. Example is given of a sealing wax. A sealing wax. Prabhu, 5 more minutes. Example is given of a sealing wax. 5 minutes, Prabhu. Yeah. Example is given of a sealing wax. Right? This sealing wax was normally used by the kings. Now, in the earlier days, when the confidential letters, today of course we know in lotus notes we send marking confidential, but it can sometimes never be confidential. But in those days, they used to seal the letters with a special type of sealing wax. Right? Now, it is mentioned that the sealing wax usually was colorless. Colorless sealing wax means what? That the message which one king wants to pass to another king is not very confidential. But sometimes the confidentiality was reflected in the color of that sealing wax. So, sometimes the king used to make the sealing wax yellow in color to say very confidential. Sometimes he used to make the sealing wax red in color, most confidential. Like that. So, the color of the sealing wax. Now, it is mentioned that how is this sealing wax gets this color. It is mentioned that when you add turmeric to the sealing wax and you melt the sealing wax along with turmeric, then the color of yellow which the sealing wax gets, you cannot reverse that color. Because now it has completely melted and merged with that turmeric. So this example is given. So similarly it is mentioned that Dravata Chetasa, the gopis' meditation on Krishna was so much that Krishna has got so mixed into their consciousness, it is impossible now, like the sealing wax and the turmeric, to remove him despite any Ashtanga Yoga process. Okay? And Lord Krishna says, Uddhava tells that chanting has received the perfection of human form of life. In Mukunda Mala Stotra, there is a very nice verse which says, I don't mind repeated births. Maharaj Kulashekara is saying, I don't mind repeated births, but let your form decorate my mind. Let you always be in the core of my heart. And one day, such prayer will beget your mercy. This is from Mukunda Mala Sostra. I'll conclude with an example from Sachidananda Maharaj. Sachidananda Maharaj, when he was in Germany, he gave this example. When he was lecturing, he said, at the most, we can only pray. At the most, we can only pray, but our prayers will definitely be heard by Lord Krishna. He says, though we are very, very inattentive when we are chanting, Krishna is very attentive when we are chanting. And he gave a very interesting analogy. He said, if you see all the doors of ISKCON to the altar, he said, all the doors only open from the inside. You will never find a door opening from the outside. He gave this example. He said that the same is true for the spiritual world also. Where he says that the doors can open only from inside and we cannot barge in. There is no barging into the spiritual world. And as he said that, incidentally, the pujari opened the altar in the temple where he was lecturing. So the point is, Swayam eva spurati adaha. Swayam eva. Lord Krishna himself has to open that doors for us. But how? What is our effort? Atta Shri Krishna namadi na bhavet grahe graham indriyai. Sevon mukhehi jivado swayam eva spurati adaha. Sevon mukhehi jivado. By our tongue, we have to utilize this tongue to vibrate the holy names in the mood in which the gopis have done. Wherein the thoughts of Krishna got so entangled into their consciousness that they had to do Ashtanga Yoga to forget Krishna. That is the kind of chanting which will make Krishna set into our consciousness. So, on one hand, Maharaj concluded by saying, though we cannot pray that, O Radha Krishna, please engage me in your devotional service, that's a very high advanced prayer. O Radha Krishna, please engage me in your devotional service, at least we can pray, O Radha Krishna, can you please first disengage me from Maya service? That is the conclusion of the lecture. So with that prayerful mood, then we can start the process of
controlling our mind, because the import of all these verses is that the mind is the root cause of all happiness and distress. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, corrections? Yes, Prabhu.
So, that application of tilaks to the different parts of the body has got nothing to do with the fact that the demigods are the controller of different sections of the body. So, it is mentioned that the body is like a temple of the Lord. So, therefore, we don't consider this as our body. Or even if we consider this as our body, we consider it to the extent that Lord, it's a gift which Lord Krishna has given, this human form of life, and this body must be used for the purpose of self-realization. It is mentioned, Aradhanam Sarvesham, Vishnor Aradhanam Param, Tasmat Parataram Devim, Tadiyanam Samarchanam. The word, it is said that out of all the worship, Lord Krishna's worship is the highest. But higher than the worship of Lord Krishna is the worship of Lord Krishna's devotee and anything associated with Lord Krishna. The word tadiya is used. Tadiyanam samarchanam. Tadiya means anything which is connected to Krishna. So for example, even the paraphernalia of the Lord are expansions of Balram. So therefore, this body which is given is also a paraphernalia of the Lord. In its rightful use, it is. We misuse it. But in its rightful use, it's the paraphernalia of the Lord. So this body is also worshipable. So we, a person who is having a high level of consciousness, doesn't think that this is my body. He says, yes, I have been given this body. It's a tool which has been given, which is actually very worshipable. Therefore, you put tilak on the body so that you can use it in the service of the Lord. So, that is the... Is it clear? Yeah, so, yeah. As regards the demigods, yes, the demigods are given charge of control of different parts of the body. But for a devotee doesn't, you know... Usually what happens is, since I come from a South Indian, you know, family, you know, I was taught that if you have a problem with the leg, then you must go to the temple and worship Ketu, you know, Rahu Ketu, you know, like that. If you have a problem with some other part, then you worship some other demigod. This is how we have been brought up. But after coming to Krishna consciousness, we know that if you water the root of the tree, then anyway Ketu, Rahu, everybody is satisfied. So if this body is worshipped in the service of Krishna, we don't have to go separately outside and pray to any demigod. So that rule does not apply for devotees. That rule though still applies for people who are not surrendered to Krishna as yet. Because if you are at least not surrendered to Krishna, you as well at least be very respectful to the demigods. But when we are surrendered to Krishna, we are still respectful to the demigods, but with the complete knowledge that the demigods are not the primary controllers. They are only acting under the instructions of Krishna. It's only a portfolio which is given to them by the prime minister, to a cabinet minister. So like that. Yes, bro.
Is it fair to give these six stages of mind that we discussed? Is it fair to say that like a devotee is progressing from the qualities of Shudra to transcendental qualities?
Correct. Correct. So these six stages of the mind need not be seen as a gradual progression in one sense. It's like a graphic equalizer. In a graphic equalizer, you find that if you take a photograph of a song, then you will find something is at this level, something is at this level. So our vikshepta may be at this level, our delusion may be at this level, our ecstasies may be at this level. So it's like that, it's a snapshot. It's not that you go always like that. It's like the, you know, Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. It's not a gradual progression. But if you take a snapshot, you are at different level on each of these parameters. Yeah. So Prabhupada says, as a Brahmana, one must worship demigods. There is no doubt about that. But Prabhupada says, as a Brahman Vaishnava, you don't have to worship a demigod. Okay. So this is coming from the tenets of Varnashrama Dharma. In Varnashrama Dharma, Prabhupada writes very clearly that Varnashrama Dharma is basically meant for conditioned souls. It's not meant for devotees. It doesn't mean devotees disregard Varnashrama Dharma. It simply means that if you are serving Lord Krishna, it is automatically you are in Daivi Varnashrama. So, the example which you are giving for the Brahmanas, that is basically that Brahmanas should worship the demigod, because Brahmanas must uphold everything which the scriptures talk about. The scriptures talk about four subject matters. Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha.
It talks about four subject matters, but the summum bonum of the scriptures, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, talks about devotional service. So as a Brahmana, it is a duty of a Brahmana to bring culture into a society. To bring culture into a society, directly a Brahmana may not be able to go and tell them the highest Radha Krishna worship. First, people have to come from the mode of ignorance gradually to the mode of goodness. And when one is situated in that mode, then Prabhupada says that is a launching pad for the mode of transcendental goodness. So therefore, Brahmanas are required in society to at least, you know, for people who can't take to the highest directly, to Vaishnavism, at least, you know, stop drinking, you know, then they'll say, okay, stop working too hard, be detached, come to the mode of goodness, do some social work, etc., etc. And then with that platform, then you can tell them that, now, you are in this material world, even if you do all these things, you are just going to go to the heavenly planets and come down eventually. So then the Vaishnavism comes on top of that. Prabhu, you had a question?
Thank you very much for the excellent class.
Thank you.
And one more comment is that Brahmana who burnt his finger, the transcendental plane came from Lord Narayan, he took away.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Okay, I'll end the class here, but before that, one announcement. I have been informed that we are celebrating Father's Day today. Okay, so all the devotees, and Gangeshwar Prabhu is waiting for us at the top, so all the devotees are requested to go, proceed towards the Prasadam Hall and celebrate Father's Day. Hare Krishna. Shrila Prabhupada Ki, Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Prema.